Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie, and by him, Kyle. Kyle, welcome to week two of Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Thank you. How are you? I haven't asked you, in a while.
I'm well. I'm loving where we're sitting right now in Marvel world. I'm loving where we're sitting right now. Weather-wise, seasonally, I'm loving that we've got that vaccine making its way through the country. Everything seems to be kind of looking up. How are you?
I'm good. I had the best weather ever. I tweeted about it yesterday. And then last night at like 3 in the morning, it was maybe the loudest thunderstorm I've ever heard. So I didn't get as much sleep because literally Thor's thunder was waking me up. It sounded like our neighbor got struck by lightning. That's how close it sounded. You know how like you can time it by the flash and then the sound?
When
they're at the exact same time, that's a really bad sign. And it was—
You're afraid of a little lightning, Kyle?
No, I'm not, but it was loud.
You're just not overly fond of what followed.
I got the reference. I was just moving on.
I wasn't going to let you though. See?
Yeah, I know. That's kind of my fault. It's a Marvel podcast. I probably should jump in with that.
No, it is funny. We had a similar night here.
Okay, so that's all we have, everybody. Thank you. There's the weather report. We'll see you next week on Friends from Work. That's all you came here for. The hard-hitting news here.
Well, I will say, you know, I recognize I also got less sleep than normal last night and most of this week. It's just been kind of crazy on the work front. But luckily, you know, we're getting some new MCU content to just shoot straight into our veins, wake us up a little bit. And I'm feeling it. You know, I'm feeling the magic today, Kyle. But before we get too far into what we have up this week, my understanding is that we have a few leftovers from last week.
Okay. Forgot about those almost. Thank you for reminding me. Yes.
Can't do that.
Okay. We talked about the timeline last week. And we were just kind of dummies with that because multiple people messaged us.
Yep.
WandaVision is confirmed to be 2 to 3 weeks after Endgame. We talked about that. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is 6 months. The director has confirmed that. And I think they reference like a few months ago is what they say in the show. Uh-huh. And then in Far From Home, on the opening little Getty Images movie high school video thing, they say it's been 8 months since people returned.
Yeah, man.
Which we just missed.
Yeah.
Well, you know. So that's the exact, that's the actual chronological answer there.
It's funny because I saw that come in and I realized if that were in any other movie, I'm sure we would have caught it. But it struck me how little I've rewatched Far From Home compared to the other films in the MCU, because our rewatch order culminates with Endgame, and because we've sort of thought of that being the Infinity Saga, it honestly makes it really fun to revisit Far From Home now, because it's just one that I'm not quite as familiar with. But it is kind of crazy that, I mean, just that movie came out in 2019. right after Endgame, and the two projects that we've gotten now in 2021 both take place prior to that movie, which I think kind of reinforces our initial reaction to that movie, where we thought it maybe did release a tad early. Don't you think?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because I'm watching all these films now, kind of like Phase 2, asking that same question again. Where are the other Avengers? And so I'm kind of always monitoring these shows of like, ooh, is this an Avengers level threat? Yes or no? And why wouldn't they be there again?
Right.
And I feel like we kind of answered that on WandaVision. But again, it just changes my perspective when I realize that Far From Home is after these two. And yes, could they have waited to put it out? Probably. Yeah, probably.
Right. You know, again, we've talked about some of the Sony behind the scenes stuff there before, but
right.
I am curious to throughout the season track that question that you're talking about, because I know people did raise that at certain points with WandaVision. I haven't had any red flags there yet, but I'm curious to see if there have been any moments that raised your eyebrow in terms of whether Spider-Man should be appearing or something.
No, not yet. I kind of like with these characters where we left them all, you know, like with Wanda, we talked about how there wasn't a Avengers team really in the background operating anyways. With these guys, right. We're kind of leaving them in like the political world, but they're not even really operating as Avengers or a team anyways. And so I don't think that their gut would be to call Spider-Man, who they've had incredibly small amount of time with.
Right.
Again, maybe Doctor Strange is like the one wild card in all this, because they do reference him, like they know who that is.
Right.
But yeah, and then Spider-Man, same thing. He does actually ask for the other Avengers, you know,
right.
And kind of gets an answer. So it's just something I always kind of like, because again, I love the practical nature of all this. Speaking of the practical nature of this, my favorite leftover, and I can't believe we didn't talk about this last week, is that somebody wrote in and mentioned that we get that one quick shot of Bucky waking up in his apartment and he's sleeping on the floor, the hardwood floor.
Right.
Doesn't have a bed. And
right.
I love that kind of being a shout out to when Falcon says to Cap, it's your bed, right? It's too soft now. Your pillow, everything's too soft over there. They didn't have, you know what I'm talking about?
Right, right.
What a fun little shout out to an ex-war person. And actually, this is really cool. One of our listeners, I guess, is ex-military or retired military or has like spent a lot of time in the military, has a military background, let me put it that way, and was messaging us. And he was just bringing a different perspective on some of this stuff. Things like that, the PTSD, the sleeping on a hard floor, some of the other ways they have to process, like the way Bucky is going through the amends list,
right.
Being something kind of relatable to somebody in the military. It was pretty cool. It just kind of adds another layer to it, you know?
Yeah. No, I caught a few of those, and I loved seeing that. It does. I feel like this is a show that is dealing with a lot of themes around like patriotism verging on nationalism and sort of what a career in the military looks like in the context of some of these things. And so I think that having that perspective is awesome. And I was going to say like the reference back, you know, to that Sam Wilson quote from the top of Winter Soldier, I've been really happy with the way that this show so far has referenced back to the prior Captain America films, especially in a way that doesn't feel too forced to me. It just feels really organic. And again, I think the Henry Jackman music showing up, it really helps that too. But just these little bits that we get have been really fun. I feel like that's exactly the level that I'm wanting of connective tissue between what came before. Like, I don't want it to be constant shout outs and fan service, right? But it makes it really feel like it's fresh in some ways, but it's still definitely a part of the story that we've been watching.
Right. Okay. Two more really quickly. And one of them's a two-parter. It's interesting how few people recognize Bucky. Part of the whole storyline in the first episode is that people do kind of recognize Falcon and the banker, and they you know, they have to remind him sometimes, but they're like, oh yeah, it's him. Whereas Bucky's kind of just walking around downtown, going on dates, and his date has no idea who he is.
Right.
Part of that, I think, is because, you know, his identity was concealed for a lot of it, whereas right. Falcon was more out there in that way, visually. But, yeah, I don't know. You would think occasionally somebody would recognize him still, because he still yeah. was involved. I guess even in Infinity War, this takes a deep dive. You have to start going into all the history of, like, where was he and how would people know, et cetera. Because I'm right. now thinking, like, well, I guess he was in Wakanda, kind of in hiding where no one would know, post-Winter Soldier. And then
yeah.
he fought in Infinity War, but only in Wakanda. And then he got blipped. And right. so when he came back, there hasn't been that much time for people to recognize who he was.
Well, I think people could recognize him, one, from those Smithsonian exhibits that we've seen, for people yep. that, you know him as being part of the Howling Commandos, which, you know, it's hard to say kind of in this universe, like, if that's something that's spread through the history books or whatever. But the thing that I thought was funny, and I think we talked about before, was, you know, he was like an international fugitive there for a second.
Right.
Whenever he was framed for the bombing at that Sokovia Accord summit. And I like that thread has held, right? Like, the government folks for sure know who he is and are keeping tabs
yeah,
on
true.
Him. But, you know, it does make sense to me that while that was maybe a big story in the era of Civil War, that immediately preceded, you know, Infinity War and everything that came after and people being blipped out. And so it's been, what, probably 7 or 8 years, I guess, at this point. Since that. And so I, you know, I guess I buy that most people probably have other things on their minds.
Well, and this guy specifically was referencing that date and how he was even making comments of saying things like, oh, I have to wear these gloves from poor circulation and I'm 106 years old. And this guy was like, how does she not catch on? And I think that's probably just like, you know, even if she kind of knew who Bucky was from some history lesson, she probably doesn't assume she's dating him right now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, the chances of that. Anyways, probably with any celebrity, you'd be like, there's no way I'm actually sitting here with, you know, Vince Vaughn or whatever.
Right. I like that Vince Vaughn was your pick.
Yeah. I was trying to, right there in the moment, I was thinking, what celebrity should I say? Why did I go Vince Vaughn? I don't know. But I did. I was going to say Robert Downey Jr., but then I was like, I don't want people to think Tony Stark, you know?
So you know what, though? There's still the Jon Favreau link, though, because of Swingers. So you're still kind of within right. that well, RDJ universe.
And I actually met Vince Vaughn, remember, in one of our other episodes. Right. That's why it came to my mind. I spent 15 minutes talking to him. So
did you recognize him?
I totally did, yeah. Yeah, I totally. He's huge. He's huge. He's like 6'5", 6'6". And a big dude. Anyways, a two-parter.
But, so in some way, that kind of disproves your theory by referencing him, right?
Because yeah, maybe I should have chosen somebody else anyways. yeah, maybe somebody more like Michael Douglas.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, last two-parter. We need to a little bit talk about the practical nature of Cap's shield and the technology side of this all, because... Mm-hmm. Like, who is taking care of all the technology stuff? Like, we see Falcon working on his own thing, and he does make the reference to the government does mess with Red Wing and get their hands on things, mm-hmm. and I get that. But then other tech, when it gets damaged, who's helping with that? And with Captain Shield, I'm so confused, too. Like, didn't Thanos destroy the shield or, like, crack it in half? When did it become whole again? And Tony's not alive to fix it.
Well, those are different shields, though, because this is the one that Steve brought back, remember, at the end of Endgame. So, like, his shield that we've had with him the whole time has been destroyed, but Steve comes back with a new shield, and that's the one that I think was given to Sam and then now passed on to John Walker.
From the other timeline, though? Or, like, the timeline stuff gets really sticky here.
I mean, it goes back into not knowing quite what that looks like. So, I mean, you could argue maybe he went to Wakanda and had a new one made, you know, in our timeline, which would definitely be possible. But I've always thought maybe he... What I think was really interesting about that line, and I've been curious to see how the show will follow that up, is when Sam says it feels like it's someone else's and Steve says it isn't, I've always taken that sort of literally. like not Steve saying, well, it isn't mine anymore because I'm passing it on, but almost like it isn't because this was made for you. Like this is a new shield that I had, that I somehow came by with the express purpose of giving it to you. I don't know if that's the case. That's how I always read that, though.
On another side note on that, though, we need to find out more about Cap in this show, I think. Because if he's alive still, why can't they just go visit him and ask him a few questions? Like the old version of him.
Right.
You know, because that old version of him did show up in Endgame. So if this has only been 8 months, assuming he wasn't on his deathbed, can they not go visit him? And then if he is dead, I feel like we should get some explanation of that he did die in his sleep, or, you know, that he's actually officially gone, not just retired. So I'm not faulting the show yet, but I do hope we get a little bit more info on that as we go.
Well, I still tend to think that he somehow either went back into some other timeline or went fully off the grid, because I don't see a world in which...
Okay, but old Endgame Cap is sitting there on the bench. The movie ends. Where did he go?
That's what I'm... I mean, it's a great question. I think in my mind, I don't think of him as being I don't think of him as being dead, but I also don't think of him as being in the world, like someone that they could just go check on, like you're saying, which is why I felt like maybe he somehow wound up like back in that other, like I always wondered if he was in some timeline with Peggy that he like left to come back and then is maybe back there. And the only reason I think that, and again, this is something that the Russo brothers and Marcus and McFeely even disagree on, and the way that they conceptualize what Cap was doing. So that's why I think we just really aren't going to know until, you're right, someone really clears it up within a show.
Let me make it even more complicated then, if you want to get trippy for 1 second. I'm serious.
Let's do it.
Okay, so he goes back in time to be with Peggy, but we're assuming he went back post-serum, correct?
Sure, yeah.
So why did he age then, and why didn't Bucky? Why is Bucky not aging if he's been alive and awake this whole time? And like this Isaiah guy, for example, we meet has aged. And Cap clearly ages, unless he went back to a pre-serum time.
No, because we see him dancing with Peggy, right?
So then how did he age?
Well, I mean, I think he just aged. He didn't age originally because he was frozen in the... I mean, again, this is superhero science. But
then why didn't Bucky age?
Because Bucky was kept cryogenically frozen between missions.
Every mission? So he was saving years off his life?
No, I mean, we were told that in Winter Soldier, that he would go back under and they would pull him back out. And that's why, like, that's why at the end of Winter Soldier, he's like reset him and he's like, no, he's been out of stasis for too long. And so they have to, like, that's why it's such a crazy thing when they mess with his mind again. But remember, like in Civil War, you walk in and all those soldiers are alive initially, but they're just in those cryo tubes. And then Zemo goes up and just puts a bullet in each of their heads through the glass. But I think that was what Bucky was doing between missions, and then they were just letting him out. So I think that's why he hasn't – I mean, he's probably aged a bit to the extent he's out and about, and especially since he's been back, since Winter Soldier. But I think during the entire time between when he fell off the train and whenever, you know, he kind of breaks Hydra control – I think he was being consistently cryogenically preserved.
So he's only doing like 2 day missions at a time, then going back under for a year, let's say.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Okay. And I think we're told that explicitly. I don't feel like I'm making any leaps here, but someone should check my math.
Well, that's why I bring these up to you, because people were asking me that and I didn't quite know. So, all right, I'll take your word for it. Love it. That's all the leftovers.
Well, you know, it's fitting, I guess, that we're going back through and talking about these Cap movies, because I wanted to start this episode a little bit differently today, and I'd like to talk about Captain America for a second.
Wow.
You know, which we've just never done on this podcast.
Least shocking thing I've heard today.
So here's the thing this series is making me realize. The Captain America films really did two things very well in my opinion, you'll agree with one of these and maybe not as much with the other, but Joe Johnson gave us really an incredibly faithful retelling of Captain America's origin as given to us by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, you know, back in the World War II era. And the Russo brothers then jumped, you know, almost 80 years ahead, 70 years ahead, and gave us fantastic takes on Cap's most famous stories from the mid-2000s. And, you know, mind you, Margus and McFeely were writing all these movies. But my point is, what I'm realizing we never really got is a look at the many decades between those two points in terms of kind of Cap comic history, which I'm not saying was a flaw of those films. It's just kind of interesting that they gave us that origin and then all of his like really modern stories. And the reason I bring this up is we're now getting some of these really famous moments adapted from Cap, you know, from the 60s, 70s, 80s. And it's raising a question that we've never really had to deal with in the MCU. And I think that question is, what does it actually mean to be Captain America? Like, not Steve Rogers, but Captain America specifically as the title. And I think, you know, it's so funny because it's a strange character. I mean, we've talked about that some, and we joked about it when we were talking about the first Avenger. It's a character that was dreamed up in response to a very specific situation, which was the Nazi invasion of Europe. And it was this very kind of American propaganda sort of a thing in the comics. And that's why, you know, I think that was very much shown in that Joe Johnson film. But out of that context, like out of this world where here's the clear bad guy, which is, you know, Nazi Germany or Hydra led by the Red Skull, you know, what does that character mean? Like, what does it mean that he's called Captain America? Is that character necessary? Is it even appropriate? You know, because I think what the MCU did well is after that first movie, you never really see him in that way, like as a symbol of America, the country, because he comes out and he doesn't really work for the US government. He works for SHIELD and he's like a SHIELD agent, and then he's an Avenger, and then he is an outlaw, right? Like, there's never really a moment once Steve comes back when he is someone that is seen as really definitively representing the country itself or any sort of government.
And right. So closest thing would be the Battle of New York in Avengers 1. Closest thing, but I agree.
Right, right. And even
because
then,
he does wear the old-fashioned stars and stripes. And, sure. You know, yeah.
Well, and you know, I mean, he's still, the suit still has versions of that all the way to the end. But I think what's funny is even then, right, like he's still not there. If anything, I mean, one, you know, you could look at the Avengers as sort of a separate entity. But if anything, they're kind of a product of SHIELD, which is a product of the World Security Council. And so, you know, he's never really back in that position of being this U.S. government agent, which I think was wise, you know, and I know whenever I've watched like behind the scenes stuff with Winter Soldier, that was a conscious choice because they know these are global films with global followings. And I think that they know that at this point in the world, it made more sense to have Cap be a symbol of kind of hope and this sort of optimism and this deeply rooted belief in these maybe values more than a symbol of any one country. But again, the reason I talk about this now is because I think that is the question this show is really digging into. And it's just not a question that I ever even realized I wanted answered or one that I thought needed to be taken up. But I've found it to be really compelling and kind of one of the more compelling perspectives that we've come across in the MCU.
Wow. I normally cut you off, but I just let you preach there because that was a good word, dude. I was hey, intently thanks. Listening that entire time. Yeah, we kind of talked about that a little bit too when we talked about Civil War, how when Cap lays that shield down, that's kind of him no longer being Cap in this right. way. And we kind of said that, but a little bit brushed it off as like, yeah, but we still know him as Captain America, right? But right. I noted how he talks a little differently. He dresses differently. He doesn't have that shield again. They call him Steve more than they call him Cap. But yeah, now this show is making you think it was more Steve and less Captain America, because Captain America can just be quote unquote manufactured, like replaced in this way.
Right.
I'm with you. I didn't think we'd be on that topic at this point.
Well, you know, yeah, it's just, it's so interesting because in some ways it feels like, I mean, this is maybe a perfect transition into this episode itself, right? Because this episode is called The Star-Spangled Man, and we get several callbacks to, you know, to your point. You actually brought this up exactly at the end of the last episode. You said, you know, I wonder how much of John Walker's Cap is going to be the kind of Cap One pageantry stuff, right? And the war bonds and all that. And I like that, you know, the title itself is a callback to that. But also, we get that marching band version of the theme song and everything. And it's...
And you know what else I called? I said, I think we're going to end up not hating him. Now, I know there's memes online and he does some stuff right. that you don't like, but sure. that was the whole point, I think, of like the first interview, is that he actually, I know people are going to go crazy about this, but he comes across as kind of likable. Yeah. Like he did address that. I mean, that's the whole point of the locker room scene ahead of time, is to like give him some background, some humanity, some heart, that he's right. like nervous about this role. And then he goes on stage and he says, I'm not Tony Stark. I'm not Bruce Banner, which I loved, by the way. That's yeah. all I need. You know, it's the kind of stuff I need. But yeah, it's like he answered all the questions really correctly and kind of humbly.
Yeah.
And kind of like what I guessed. I guess that they're going to probably make us not hate him. Now I know yeah. there's memes and people hate him because no. meta type stuff. But you know what I mean.
Right. No, you were totally right on that. And I had that thought when we were watching. I think it's so interesting because I would have expected something more where they're, you know, dropping him into the shoes of Steve as we've known in this way that's really kind of harsh and jarring. But you really do get his own kind of origin. And I think in some ways, even the reason I talk about going back to the Star-Spangled Man stuff is it is kind of starting over with the character, like within the MCU, because they're like, well, you know, Cap wound up being this bigger thing with the Avengers, but we're going back to Captain America as he was originally conceived. And yeah, I think it's fascinating how, one, we get that, again, the quiet open, like what we had with Sam that we talked about liking in the first episode, which I loved, the shot of the zipper going down and those conversations that he had in the locker room. And we're just kind of immediately, I think, empathizing with the character.
This is what I found interesting. If you remove his last line in the show where he says, do me a favor then, stay the hell out of the way.
Right.
Pretend that he never said that. Every single line he has before that, you kind of empathize with them. Like the right. way he's talking to Falcon and Bucky, he's not saying anything wrong. He says multiple mm-hmm. times, like, I know I'm not trying to be Steve. I know I'm not super. I'm just trying to help. And it would be easier if we worked together. Like, that's what I thought was really funny, you know?
Right.
Go back and watch it again to anyone out there, and you'll know what I'm talking about. He is trying to be friendly to them the whole time.
No, yeah.
Even when he shows up at the end, I know it's a little bit of pageantry,
right.
but at the same time, he's there to pull him out.
Right. No, absolutely. And I mean, we really do, I think, get some things that we can latch on to like him personally. You know, like I think just in terms of, you know, he's not a grating guy. He's not like over the top hokey, or he doesn't come off as arrogant, like you said. And then, you know, like after that kind of quiet scene that we have at the top, then, you know, what's interesting is there's the bombast that he's caught up in. And that's where I think it gets complicated, right? Because you're right. He doesn't really do anything quote unquote wrong in this episode, but it is interesting that it's sort of makes you queasy, the football field whole thing and the interview and the marching band. It's like a little bit of an Iron Man 2 opening scene thing. And it's that kind of weird patriotism, not the kind that we associated with Steve Rogers. And by the way, not even the kind necessarily that I think John Walker is himself trying to espouse, but it's the kind that makes you think of like fighter jets flying over a NASCAR track. Where it's like, you know, like everyone's getting like so revved up and has their American flags. And it's just like so far from what we have ever seen with Cap, like other than those really, really early War Bond moments. But like, you know, Steve was just not the sort of person that would have participated in something like that. But, you know, that's not necessarily, we find out Walker doesn't want to either. Like that's that, to your point, he's kind of having something of a Steve reaction when he's telling Hoskins, like, I don't want to do this. I just want to do the job. Like, I just want to help people. I just want to make people feel safe.
Yeah.
But but it does, it starts off right there with just this like, and as we're watching that feeling weird about it is when it cuts really perfectly to Bucky, obviously feeling weird about it too.
To all our NASCAR fans out there, I still like NASCAR, and I think a flyover is pretty dope at times. So just don't take what Robbie just said as offensive, okay? I can get down with it.
Fair, fair. I think it's interesting before we go into Bucky how when he was introduced. I thought they picked out some guy out of the military that they think they're just going to be able to use as sort of a puppet. And, you know, we might find out that that is the case in some ways. I didn't expect, like, here we find out how eminently qualified Walker actually is. Like, in some ways, he does seem to be about as perfect for the role of Captain America as you could imagine, like, with the 3 Medals of Honor and then just him being this like physical like specimen, this guy that's just like off the charts, and you see him throwing the shield and all that stuff. I don't think that I quite expected that. It's not like a twist or anything, but it really does complicate the conversation about, you know, them giving this to him over Sam.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though, is that I think the first episode kind of set it up that you're supposed to dislike this guy and he's not qualified and how dare he take the shield. And right. Then this episode's kind of like, well, he actually is a decent person, it seems like, and he's trying really hard and he does want to protect people and maybe he actually can help in some ways. And all of a right. sudden, there's a lot of gray area there.
We get these moments even later with Sam and Bucky where they're clearly kind of questioning him and trying to, you know, make clear that they don't think that he's right to have taken up this mantle. And you have Bucky ask, you know, have you ever fallen on a grenade? And he's like, yeah, 4 times.
Yeah, which like, is really funny, by the way. He's like, I have a reinforced helmet. Never mind, it's a long story, which I thought was funny.
But it's like, it's supposed to be this moment, right, of being like, you're not Steve Rogers. See, like, you wouldn't do this sort of thing. And he's like, no, I have, like, several times, though. And it's like, oh.
I know. See, I thought there was actually a couple of funny parts. Like yeah, when he shows up and says, how could you let Bucky out from this? Don't you need government, whatever? And he goes, just points at himself.
Right.
Yeah, it's me. I am the government. I just thought there was some funny things there.
Oh, yeah.
Again, no. We're supposed to hate him. I get it. So, you know.
But how, you know, and I don't know if he's even going to necessarily become a villain character or not. We'll just have to see. But, you know, we've talked about that's even what makes characters like Michael Keaton's Vulture or Josh Brolin's Thanos or Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger work so well is because on some level you like them and kind of root for them in spite of the fact that you're not really on their side.
Okay, so after the John Walker stuff, because we've already spent a ton of time talking about it, and it's one of the most fascinating things. I love it. Okay, but we got to talk a little bit about Sam and Bucky's relationship, I guess, and not only just the first scene, but kind of how that continues throughout the episode.
Right.
I got to say something. Oh, boy. Here we go. Hold on. Oh, boy. Here we go. Oh, no. I always got to be so careful. This was the first new Marvel thing for me personally where something just felt kind of off throughout the episode, which is wild because I think on Rotten Tomatoes it has like 100%. There was just a few things throughout. And so we used to kind of do this, the format of what worked and what didn't work. I'm not going to do that this time. I'm just going to sprinkle some of my concerns in.
Sure.
But I say that here because for some reason, and again, take this with a grain of salt because I still thought it was really good. I still very much enjoy it. Okay. That's always my disclaimer. But like if I was comparing it to WandaVision, something with the chemistry between the two isn't working for me quite right. It feels to me like this episode in general, I hesitate to use this word, forced some things. Like the chemistry between them felt a little Guardians 2-ish, where it's like, we know we got to play up that they kind of are butting heads. So they really go for it to where it almost feels not realistic of how they really would be. And I got to say this too, like we already heard from some listeners who absolutely loved it and thought the chemistry between the two of them was like off the charts and they loved it. And then I've already heard some negative feedback from listeners, which we really hadn't gotten in WandaVision or the first episode of this. Right. Most everything we were hearing was positive. And I am positive still on it. But something like throughout, like including the therapy scene, just felt kind of forced, and how much Bucky was playing off the staring attitude thing with, I just felt a little overdramatic at times, and I have to just say that off the top. I hate to say that. I hate being that guy, but I want to say that first, so then I can talk about all the things I loved after that.
No. I hear you, and I think I actually felt that as well. What's interesting is this was one maybe more than, well, certainly more than any other new installment of the MCU that on the rewatch that I did prior to this episode, it went way up. And, you know, it's like,
yes,
I only had a little bit of time.
I have to add right there. I specifically took a note that says my second watch eased a lot of my concerns, which is weird.
It is strange.
I watched it the first time and I felt like, okay, there's a lot of stuff off. Mm-hmm. And then on the rewatch, I was like, okay, that's not as bad. That's not what I was thinking.
Yeah. And I don't know why that is. I think maybe because I thought the same thing. I was like, I just can't quite figure out what their dynamic is because it feels like such a left turn from where we left them at the end of Endgame, where they seem to be kind of peers. And I think that the reason it started making more sense to me and bothered me less partially was maybe I just felt a little bit more oriented the second time I was watching it because we just haven't seen that relationship established again.
That is so funny you said that. It's like we know each other. Great minds think alike because we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but that's such a funny detail to include that it got better on the second watch. Mm-hmm. It was so much that way, Robbie, that I actually messaged one of our listeners back and said, watch it a second time. Because see if it gets better for you because someone was venting some of these things. Mm-hmm. And I agreed. And then I watched it and I was like, whoa. I think what they're trying to do is really play off, for example, the scene in Civil War where he says, can you move your seat up?
Right.
No. And he slides over and that's a really funny scene in that. And then like the, you couldn't have done that earlier to Spider-Man. I hate you. I think they're trying to do that, but kind of like Guardians 2, it feels like they're forcing it like times 10. Whereas like those two little glimpses were really funny in those movies.
Right.
But then, in that movie, those were both in Civil War. But then like in this case, it's like, hey, let's run with that. And it's dialed up so much that I'm losing touch with reality of it.
Right. Well, I think what makes it, as I'm trying to make it make more sense, and when I talk about kind of the shift even from that where it feels more overtly hostile, is I think you have to think about Bucky and where he is now versus even where he was then. And the fact that I think he's probably had more time. He's had more time to reflect. I think he's probably in some ways a little bit more bitter, even though things are kind of going better for him now because, you know, we talked the last episode. He's alone. I think we see now that the Steve departure really maybe hit him harder than we knew. And I think that he's taking that out on Sam. And that's why I think he's being even broodier than normal. And because I would say most of the weirdness that I felt came more from Sebastian Stan's performance than from Anthony Mackie's. I felt like Falcon is pretty on par with what we've gotten from him, but I felt like Bucky towards the end of the Infinity Saga, I was like, oh, he's just like kind of a normal guy again. And then now we're meeting up with him and he's just acting like such a weirdo.
There's clearly a post-Endgame attitude change, no doubt. Because like, think about the last scene of Endgame. He kind of smiles as Falcon gets to take the shield.
Right.
And he says, go ahead. He looks really at peace. So I guess, yeah, you're right that losing Cap was more traumatic, I guess, is what they would say. But I think it's fair to say it has felt like a little bit of a left turn. And then I would also say, I think part of that is also that I felt like in general, the episode was trying to do so much. If you think about the critique of WandaVision episode one being, wow, nothing happened until that one weird scene.
Right.
Even in this series, episode one was kind of slow character developing.
Right.
This episode, if you think about it, is doing a ton. You have the Flag Smashers trying to steal this vaccine and getting more background on them.
Uh-huh.
Then you have this dynamic between Falcon and Bucky, this arguing, but kind of working together, but kind of not. Then you're also trying to make us feel for a new Captain America. What does that look like? Like we talked about with patriotism, nationalism. And then you have social issues of race and economic differences.
Mm-hmm.
And all this is kind of happening in like a 47-minute episode. And I just a little bit felt like something's a little off. It's like we're trying to do so much. And then they include Zemo, and they have some Hydra background.
Right.
And they introduce Isaiah.
Right.
Like, think about it. Like, there was just so much going on. Like, they go to Isaiah's house. They walk out of the house and get arrested. It's like, it's just, there was a ton
going on.
And I think it just maybe tried to bite off a little more than it could chew. Don't hate me for saying that.
No. I mean, I feel that certainly more probably than anything else that any other single episode that we've gotten from these Disney Plus series.
You always use the word bloated.
Yeah. I think to me, the reason, again, and that's something else that I think was better on the second time. And I think part of the reason why when things do get better for me on the second time is once I kind of get my bearings, then I feel like I'm in a better spot to evaluate it. But I think it says something that it was a little difficult to get your bearings in this one. And I think it's probably because of what you're saying. It's funny though, because other than that very last scene, we still haven't really gotten Zemo. And other than a brief shout out, we still haven't gotten Sharon Carter. So, I mean, there's still big pieces of the show, at least as advertised, that they didn't go into yet, you know? And so like it could have been even in my mind, it could have been much more bloated still for them only having six episodes to tell the story.
Okay. Now the reason I'm really positive though, really hopeful is that I'm predicting this is going to be one of these things that they are going to have some making amends moment. And then I think the chemistry will feel really good. Even if they are still funny and like butting heads,
uh-huh.
I think it will feel less forced. This just feels to me like they were directed like, hey, this is early on. This is the first time the audience sees you together and you guys got to butt heads.
Right.
So it felt like they were like forced into that a little bit. But I do think there's going to be a moment where they get over it and then it's going to feel really natural to me.
Well, and yeah, I think you're right. And I do appreciate, by the way, that moment will feel more earned, because I'll say one thing that I was, as I was kind of expecting what this show might be and could be, I was a little wary of one, like we talked about last week, it just starting off and now Sam's the new Captain America and he and Bucky are going on missions together. Like, I didn't want it to be like, oh, the friends of Cap together again, like up to shenanigans where they're just like best buds, because we didn't, like, they don't really have much commonality other than Cap. And I think that's why I do like the idea of, well, now that Cap is gone, that commonality is sort of gone as well. And from Bucky's perspective, like the fact that the guy that was his best friend forever, that he had so much respect for and so much love for, handed down this mantle to Sam, and Sam just in his mind threw it away. I could see, I mean, I think that's where a lot of the anger is coming from. And I really liked some of the conversations we got in the therapy session, even if even if that scene itself wasn't perfect, because I think you start to see that is where that anger is coming from. And I think that's why the resolution you're talking about and them being, you know, a quote-unquote team will actually feel a lot better to me than if we didn't go through this whole rigmarole and we just jumped right in, just assuming that now, you know, it's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Right. Last tiny negative note on that front, okay? I just felt like in general, you're right, it was Bucky more than it was Falcon, and it all just happened too fast with him. So, like, the first scene, he's super pissed about the shield being taken. Right. And he confronts Falcon. And within 45 seconds, they're making jokes about wizards and hobbits. And that's kind of the thing that keeps going on. It's like, you know, it's very serious that he doesn't have a plan and he's really pissed. But then as soon as he falls on the ground, it's kind of like, haha, just come up here north. Like, I'll tell you the plan. It just felt like it's transitioning too quickly. And then actually, I was going to say the same thing a little bit. Again, take this all with a grain of salt because I really enjoyed it. A little bit with the John Walker thing, where the first scene, they show us John Walker as vulnerable. He's nervous to be Captain America. You feel for him because he's like, I don't know if I want this role. I don't know that I'm ready. Okay, then time to get to work. He goes out and puts on a performance, and that's all fine. But within the course of the episode, by the end, he's got like attitude. He's claiming he's the government. He's pushing back on Falcon and Bucky. He's kind of saying, stay the hell out of the way. Like, it seems like that just happened too fast. Was like the nervous, I'm nervous to get into this role guy?
See, but that I'm okay with because I feel like it's all part of the bravado, right? Like, I think the idea is he's stepping like
he's
into these shoes.
He's wearing it.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's why I think, you know, because he's definitely not at a point where he's going to be vulnerable with these guys who he knows don't trust him. And that's why I think that opening scene was so valuable, because I could see a world in which we didn't get that until later. And it was this moment of like, oh, look, but see, behind all this, he's actually kind of a nervous, relatable guy. I like that we got that up front, because to me, it does inform some of that stuff that we get, especially, you know, as we get later in the episode.
I hear you, and I think I agree with you, but I still felt a little weird. So that's where I'm going to leave it in general, that it was a little bit forced, some of these things. Can I ask you some questions that I don't understand?
Sure.
And I think our audience would appreciate. So, Isaiah, do you know more about him from the comics? And then why did Bucky think it was the right call to go there? And then why did Isaiah end up in jail if he was a hero fighting for America? I will quickly also add, when I watched it a second time, that's another example of something I picked up the second time, that he mentions that he was in jail, I think, for testing. I noticed the second time, like, they wanted to maybe replicate the serum or something. But can you tell me more about Isaiah?
So I'm not that familiar with that character himself. I'm sure that there is an iteration there that I can look more into. But this is wild, you know, for the MCU, for what we've known so far. There's precedent in the comics, and it's another one of the interesting parts of the history being mined here that I was kind of talking about earlier. Like, in the comics, in the intervening years between Steve's disappearance and his, you know, thaw, the government keeps trying to replicate the serum, and they keep trying to get more Captain Americas. Like, there's this sense, very much kind of like where we are now in the MCU, that, oh, well, Cap is gone, and he died this hero's death, and now we need, like, someone else to step in those shoes. So you have several different folks that did that, that had kind of varying levels of power based on the super soldier serums that were used. And I think, you know, we're to understand that none of those were ever totally successful. Like, I think it's really important in the comics universe, I would imagine in the MCU, but I guess we'll see, that the exact thing that makes Steve Captain America, the Erskine formula, is never fully recaptured. And so that's why you always see these kind of downsides of, like, you know, like the super soldiers that we see in Civil War that they were able to recreate, you know, it seems like were driven to be like hyper aggressive and were maybe like dealing with some form of insanity. And then, you know, I think what I thought was really interesting about this from an MCU perspective is the Incredible Hulk and the first Avengers film, you know, tells us that the experiment that turns him into the Hulk is rooted in them trying to right. replicate the serum. So I think they're going to, I would imagine, have to address that and sort of situate whatever was done to Isaiah in the context of all of that. But, you know, I think he's, to answer your original question, I think he's supposed to be kind of one of these guys that was hopefully going to fill those shoes there in the interim. But there's a lot here that is unfamiliar and really intriguing to me, like the prison point that you brought up.
Okay. I have two routes I need to take this. Okay. So they're separate, but they both branch from this. Okay. First, can we just talk a teeny bit more about that super serum? Cause that's what I wrote down. Let's talk about it. Like,
right.
So these Flag Smashers are enhanced. How did they get it? What I thought it was that they gave one to Cap. Remember, we see all the others get smashed except for the one. Then people try to replicate it in like Incredible Hulk or even Winter Soldier. There are leftover, like you're talking about soldiers. Uh-huh. But where are these ones now coming from? Or how are they enhanced then?
Well, I think that's the idea that whenever – I think that's why we're talking to Zemo at the end of this episode.
That there's even more people?
Well, no, because – well – potentially. I think, one, the question you're asking is, I think, a question we're supposed to be asking. And what I gathered is that Bucky, you know, in that conversation, Isaiah's like, you know, I was in prison. They would come in to my cell and run these tests. And even your people were there. And that's why Bucky's like, my people, meaning Hydra. And I think he's thinking that somehow whatever was done to Isaiah, that like Hydra folks somehow got their hands on, you know, his DNA or whatever, and potentially that's the route that led to now these people having this. I think, or at least that's the only thread Bucky can think to follow, because I think he knows of no other source that these new super soldiers could have come from. So I think that's why we're going to see Zemo, is he's tracking down, because they were like, he's like, well, there's one person who knows like everything about Hydra. And so I think their idea is that Zemo will, in the context of that big file dump, have seen really everything tied, probably specifically to like the attempts to have more super soldiers or winter soldiers or whatever you want to call them. So I think that's where we're heading next.
Hmm. The other route I need to go with this is, I'm not sure we've ever had an MCU project take current social issues as head on as this. And I think that feels a little foreign to some people, because the MCU for the most part has stayed out of social things. You could argue that Black Panther dives into issues of race and all that. Absolutely. But it's kind of viewed through the context of race in Wakanda, and they bring one white guy into it, but you get used to Wakanda being the norm, right? And then it's told through that perspective. This is the first time we're getting like race issues in America on screen.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, because I was going to say, even, you know, Ragnarok is definitely dealing with colonialism or imperialism.
I'm not saying all their movies are, right. you know, they never touch these
things.
No,
but yeah, this is definitely the most in your face.
So I have two disclaimers I want to give. This is obvious. One, whenever this kind of stuff comes up, I don't feel that super qualified to talk about it. Okay, so it's not that I'm avoiding it. I just am not the leading expert in race in America. So,
right. You mean like us two white guys aren't the most qualified right, people?
Exactly. So I don't want to say something that, you know, I'm not qualified to say.
Sure.
But secondly, I did enjoy that aspect of it on this episode. I didn't feel like it was too overt. I do get that some of the comments were on the nose. For example, it's Black Falcon. No, I'm just Falcon. Are you black kid? Just because you're a kid? Haha. Like, and that's a joke and it's funny, but that's obviously very poignant to what we're talking about, right?
Right. Although I really liked that as sort of a good Sam personality moment.
Me too, but that's what I'm saying. I didn't think it was too overt. In general, the race commentary I thought was pretty well done. Like the cop thing played out some big stereotypes, but kept them really subtle.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be commentary on it. Like, for example, just the fact that they do get pulled over because they're arguing and it's a black guy and a white guy, right?
Right.
And then they immediately say to Bucky, is this guy bothering you?
Right.
Assuming Falcon's the one bothering him because he's black. Then there's even this subtle line of Bucky says, just give him the ID. Like, just give it to him if it's not a problem. So there's a lot of commentary, a lot of heavy lifting going on in that quick scene, right? But then, not to mention, you know, the Isaiah thing is not just the super serum commentary. It's also commentary on the fact that he was black and a super soldier, and yet somehow he ended up in this really poor house and in jail,
right?
He says. And then Falcon says, why didn't you tell me about this guy? Why didn't you tell Cap about this guy?
Right.
Et cetera. And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. There was other stuff going on. Like, for example, one other thing. The cop didn't really give Falcon the benefit of the doubt until he found out he's a famous black guy.
Right.
Then it was like, oh, crap, sorry. What was I thinking? And that kind of reminded me, too, of, like, the bank scene in the first episode where the guy's like, I know you from something. Is it the LSU football team? Because it's just these little stereotypes of, like, that must be where I know you from. You're a big black dude.
Yeah.
So it's weird because on one hand, I think it is really overt in this show, like we've never had. On the other hand, I thought it was done pretty well.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it had me wondering when this script was finalized because, I mean, in the context of the last year, that scene hits especially hard, even though, you know, it's ultimately kind of a minor brush. To me, what was really interesting is after that whole moment of them clearly stopping because they think that there's a black guy harassing Bucky, it ends with Bucky is actually the one that has the warrant out for his arrest. So it's like
right.
It's even more of a sort of message there. But yeah, I agree, and I think some people have differing thoughts on how this stuff should be approached and whether it should be approached. And
we've already heard from some of those people, by the way.
Well, you know, my take is that the DNA, it is in the DNA of Marvel to address the quote unquote world outside your window. I mean, that's what Stan always really emphasized. You know, he always wanted this to be a thing where, and that has repercussions all across the board. I think we've talked a lot about how that means they try to make it so that, okay, let's assume that this one guy has the powers of a spider, but everything else is like as it is in our world, right? Like the president, like in Marvel Comics, for instance, like the American president that is president at the time in the real world is always the president in the comics. Like whatever's happening politically is what's happening in the comics. Like during there were a lot of these famous issues that Stan himself wrote, kind of dealing with drug addiction as that was kind of becoming more prevalent in American culture. Like it's something that you can say you don't like, and I think people are absolutely entitled to that. And I don't think that makes you some sort of Philistine. But I do think that it's sort of it's not something new to the superhero genre or to Marvel. And so I think that personally, when you do have something like the topic of a black Captain America, and you do have a show like that coming out in the context of everything we've seen happen in the past year, starting with the protests last summer, I think that there is something of a responsibility to reflect that, that reality, and again, to kind of reflect the world outside our windows.
Talking about how this episode's trying to do a lot and a lot of social issues, another funny, tiny little commentary, and this is not what they were, I don't think, intentionally going for, but I thought it was interesting with Isaiah in context of the Abraham Reisman interview about how Marvel has had a long history of not necessarily giving credit to the creators of some of these characters.
Right.
And I couldn't help but think about that context a little bit when you have this super soldier Isaiah who is apparently really strong and doing a bunch. He was a hero. And yet we know nothing of him, Not only the race side of it, but also that side of it.
Yeah, there's a meta component there.
Yeah, there was a lot going on in this. It's funny because a lot of times I come in here with funny likes and, like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, here's a really funny line, this made me laugh and all that. Like, I'm not even going to get to some of that stuff because there's so many things already that were really heavy going on. And I'll just end the race conversation by saying it'll be really fascinating to see how they, you know, toe that line throughout the rest of this show.
Right.
Like, how are they going to represent that going forward?
Well, and, you know, you talked about last week how that was something you wanted to track, and we talked about whether that was part of Sam's hesitance in taking the shield for himself. And I like the pacing on this, narrative of, you know, why Sam chose to do that. And he keeps kind of sort of dodging the question from Bucky, but the most clear answer that we've gotten was this line where he says, look, you know, you and Steve may never understand it, but...
Right, which is, again, yeah. Yep.
Right. And I do think, like, I think that that's a moment where we're getting a look at the different obstacles that Sam faces as a black man. And I think he feels, probably rightly, that Steve had no idea the skepticism that would accompany Sam wielding that shield. You know, like, and I think it plays... I think it's fair to say that Steve... if he's had a fault, it's been maybe his naivete where in situations like this, he believes in the best in people. It may not have fully really crossed his mind what Sam would go through if he were to just, you know, confidently walk forward and say, yep, I'm Captain America, let's go. And the kind of blowback that I think he knows he would face that Steve probably it wasn't thinking of.
Well, and one interesting little just practical tidbit is that Steve was alive in the 40s, and then he missed the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Right.
Which was a huge race movement, you know? Not that he couldn't have caught up on that.
Yeah, no, that is a really good point.
But he wasn't there for all of that, like Sam would know through his relatives or his family or whatever, right. You know?
Well, and which is funny because...
Not defending Steve, but I'm just saying he wasn't there for some of that.
No, I mean, I think it's funny because, you know, the thing that Sam... tell Steve to check out, you know, to put onto his list in Winter Soldier is Trouble Man by Marvin Gaye. And, you know, like that is very much something that's rooted exactly in that kind of time that you're talking about Steve having missed. And I think that there's something there too. But I think what's so interesting about the situation as it is now is Sam... surely, like in some ways, seeing John Walker and seeing the reaction to John Walker, which seems to be, you know, kind of overwhelmingly positive from everyone that isn't Sam and Bucky, I'm sure just reinforces a lot of the insecurities that we were talking about last episode.
Yeah. So you brought up the therapy scene, kind of shifting gears here.
Uh-huh.
Another thing that frustrated me about that scene is not only did I feel like it was a little forced and Bucky specifically was being overly dramatic. And I get that they want Bucky to have an attitude, but it felt like even this was like, okay, you're overdoing it. I love that you finally did get a real shot there of Bucky saying, you know, if Steve was wrong about you, then maybe he was wrong about me. And that was this cool, heavy moment.
Right.
One of my biggest frustrations was then Sam says, are you done? And are you finished? And then he says the line we just talked about. But if you watch it again after that, I'm frustrated that Sam just gave up on it at that point. I felt like we finally got there, and then he gave Bucky like 3 seconds to respond. Bucky's like looking down, thinking, and then he goes, you know what? This is dumb. It's pointless. Forget it. I'm leaving. And it's like, no, we finally got there. That was a frustrating thing, Sam, that you finally had the breakthrough. You could talk it out.
I think that's how we're supposed to feel, though.
I know, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, I do think that scene's the most insight we've gotten so far into where these characters are, you know, kind of mentally and emotionally. But one more thing about that scene, well, like my favorite parts were the more kind of serious lines that we've already talked about. But I will say there is some really great, to me, physical comedy in that scene, just like almost like straight slapstick, but the like interlocking legs getting really close to each other, I thought was funny. I could see how some people would think it's too goofy, and maybe that's part of what you think is a little too Guardians 2-ish, but it worked for me.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. The like the staring contest maybe is the part that's too forced for me.
Right.
Whereas I did like that joke. I liked the Hobbit joke earlier. That was really funny to me. Like, I read it in 1937. Right. Like, that's the ultimate one-up. I've been around. Yeah, the big three was funny. Oh, the funniest part, too, is that John Walker brings up the big three. Right. He's like, we're dealing with the big three. And then he's like, there's no such thing as wizards. Okay, then it's either aliens or androids.
Right. I was just going to say, I also really love the term Freaky Magoo that Sam pulled up. Yeah, I'm just going to have to stick that one in my back pocket.
Shout out to my brother-in-law who does that stuff all the time. He just comes up with names. So, like, if you're being funny, I'm like, hey, you know, Chattery McGee, calm down over there. Or, you know, he just comes, and I love it. That's what this comes from. It's kind of like Tony Stark in that way.
Oh, totally.
I also want to say one of my other favorite scenes was when – I know I'm bouncing all over the walls here, okay? So just everyone calm down. You watch the episode, so just follow along with me. I really liked the scene when John Walker pulls up the car and he's like trying to get them to come in.
Right.
Not only the dialogue there of planning that out, but also the stop the car. Okay, just go. Keep driving. Like, that was pretty funny. The helmet, the grenade. I liked that dynamic.
Right. Well, I wanted to talk about that scene. I mean, that, you know, that whole scene in general some, because, or I guess more the one that's preceding that, the fight with the flag smashers.
Okay.
Because
that was the last thing I had, the fight scene. And then I need to ask you a few questions about the flag smashers.
Okay, that's perfect. Cause that's what I wanted to talk about too. Yeah, man, this was such a fun action scene to me. Like, I thought it was, I thought the balancing back and forth between the truck trailer things was so, that was so fun.
I thought it was terrible.
What's that?
I thought it was terrible.
You thought it was terrible?
I literally wrote, the special effects were so bad, Robbie, I don't know what was going on. Something was so wrong with the special effects. Okay, hold on. Now, this is unbelievable. We never have this happen.
Wow.
Now I'm exaggerating for effect. But my first dislike was the special effects. It didn't look weird to you? Something was off. And actually, some of our listeners commented on that too. Like, the first episode, the action scene of flying around looked so movie quality. This episode reminded me, okay, it's still a show.
Huh. That's weird. Yeah, that didn't, I mean, people are wiser than I am, but that's, yeah, that didn't hit me.
I think that's a weird difference between you and I. I'm like weirdly OCD about how realistic does the CGI look. Like, really OCD about it. Like, it doesn't matter. I could give you examples. But there's like an expectation level there. And then if it doesn't meet it, I feel like sick to my stomach while it's happening. If even like the background looks a little bit off. And I know it's like the weirdest
thing to be hung up on. No, it's definitely not. But the funny thing to me is that we didn't talk about this, but I had more of those concerns with some of the, you know, few action scenes we got in WandaVision, weirdly enough, than I did here.
I never did in WandaVision, except for the tiniest bit at the very end when they're fighting as witches in that last episode. It didn't bother me because it was so small, but this was worse than that, I thought. I said to my wife, if that was like a 95 out of 100, if Infinity War is 100 out of 100 in CGI and special effects, then I thought WandaVision was like a 90 to 95, and I thought this was like an 80 to an 85. So I'm not saying disastrous, but it was clearly a step down to me.
Huh. Yeah,
Thanos fighting Doctor Strange on Titan, right? So those visuals, if that's the pinnacle of what special effects can look like, it's down from that.
I think to me, though, I would compare it more to the stuff from Winter Soldier and Civil War, because I think it's operating more in that realm.
Sure, but that's better, too.
Sure,
that's
but better. I don't know. I guess I need to rewatch it. That didn't cross my mind, but obviously it's striking other people really, as being a negative thing.
And I'm really passionate about it, but I'm ready to move on beyond that and talk about the actual fight scene if you want. And then I also want to get into some questions with the flag smashers. So I just need to say that because it bothered the heck out of me. And I'm hoping because of the first episode that this is not a trend, okay? That this was a weird outlier. Maybe the best special effects editor they had was on vacation. Let's say, and they had to get the backup guy.
Look, there are times through the entire MCU where I think the special effects are like better and worse in certain areas. Like, all the way up through Endgame. And we've talked about like that. I don't think Endgame is 100 out of 100 the whole way through. But so it's not that I'm unwilling to find fault there. I think it's just funny that like maybe I just wasn't paying attention to the same things you were here.
You'll see it when you watch it again. It just looks funny. I'm going to get off this, though, because I don't want to keep beating this to death. I also was disappointed that Bucky gets his butt kicked. Like, what is... come on. Where I need a little bit of the Winter Soldier vibe. I get it. His mind is clean now, so he doesn't have that ferocity. But come on. You got kicked out by Carly. Then you got grabbed by two other guys and just kind of stood there. And then you got thrown under the truck. Like, this is the same Bucky that was, like, wiping the floor with the Avengers in Civil War.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I
know it's not the same mentally, okay?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not raising that. I'm saying he kind of got his butt kicked in Civil War when he was fighting one super soldier. I mean, like, in that flashback that we get when those other guys...
Okay, but when he's breaking out of prison... He gives Black Widow the biz. He gives Tony without a suit, I get it, the biz. You know, Black Panther does give him a little bit of a run for his money, but still, he's right there neck and neck with Black Panther.
Yeah, but I would say Black Panther and Steve are both, could be described as having that sort of super soldier level strength. And that's why I think, like, I think here the point is, I mean, he's being held by... you know, three or four people at any given time that I think are supposed to be as strong as he is. So I think that, like, the advantage he normally has over someone like Natasha or someone like Tony, if he doesn't have a suit, is kind of lost. And I think it's supposed to be more in the position he was in that scene in Civil War, where when he's fighting, like, another super soldier, he gets beaten, you know, and now there are, like, three of those. So I see what you're saying, but I don't think the takeaway is supposed to be, oh, look, Bucky's way weaker than he used to be. I think the point is supposed to be, oh, look, these guys are, like, as strong or stronger than he is.
I think what's interesting to me in general is that I went into these Disney Plus shows thinking, oh, I want some of the action. I really enjoy the action in Infinity War. I've told you one complaint I have in Endgame is that the last battle should be a little bit longer. So I'm, like, an action guy. In that way. And yet, throughout WandaVision and the first two episodes of this show, I'm now finding myself realizing my favorite parts about these shows is not the action. I love the character development, the slow pacing of these shows, and letting the action be left to the big films. Like, these can be filler character development type things that build up to a huge action thing in the movie. It's just kind of funny because that's a full 180 for me. Like, for me, WandaVision, I loved all of it, by the way. But my least favorite part was the action. And now I'm watching this thinking the same thing. Like, I liked a ton of this episode. Like, the car scene right after the action. Uh-huh. The dialogue there walking. So it's just kind of funny.
No, I think, again, I think what's funny is it's not necessarily that you and I feel differently on that in general. But I would say what's funny to me is I do feel differently about that in this show. In that, like... WandaVision was so unique and so intimate for so much of the show. And then starting with that scene, well, really starting with the scene in episode 8 when, you know, Agnes is there in Salem. And then the way that episode ends when she's, like, floating and has the kids, I was a little turned off because it went into a... It didn't feel like a left turn story-wise. It felt like a left turn visually and tonally from what we've been getting. And it just didn't, it looked like, I mean, you know, Agatha as a character could be a little bit goofy, but though Catherine Hahn's portrayal was really great, but just like the powers that came with that, yada, yada, yada. My point is, I would have probably been with you there, but here, I've really enjoyed the action scenes, not more than the conversations, but I came in ready. Like, I was going to say, like, that the moment, even when John Walker arrives in this scene, I thought was really well executed because he was actually, I thought, really fun to watch fight. Like, I expected him to be kind of more brute force, but he really does. He has the moves down. I thought, like, the shield throw to catch Hoskins was sort of a particularly nice touch. And the other side, I would say, just to get off of like, visual effects and choreography and stuff, that was cool about this scene is, again, the Henry Jackman stuff in a very specific way. Like, again, we got the Winter Soldier theme when it's just Bucky fighting, which was fun. But what I thought was even crazier, and I've never thought about this, Kyle, we've talked about the themes off air over and over again and kind of some of the strengths and weaknesses that Marvel has had in that department over the years. But for the first time watching this, I was actually kind of grateful that we really have two Cap themes in the MCU. Like, we have the one that Sylvester introduces that I think people think of as being Steve's theme, and then we have the one that Jackman uses for Winter Soldier and Civil War. And I love that because it wouldn't feel appropriate to have the Sylvester theme there. Like, I wouldn't feel right to me. But Jackman's Cap theme, it really ties the new character into that history, I thought.
Yep. Henry Jackman's music so far has been a positive on this. I have it under my light category. He also has a dope song when they're trying to escape in the plane, the Flag Smashers. There's a really cool, like, synth-bassy thing going on. I've been pleasantly surprised, and I agree with the theme thing. We were like, oh, that's the Cap theme we know, but not the one from Cap 1. And then just to put a bow on the special effects thing, I was just talking about the visual of the special effects. I agree, the choreography was really fun. How John Walker showed up was fun, I thought. All those little things were cool. And then I also need to add that this was one of those things that really eased on my second watch.
Okay.
So when I said that concerns were being eased, one of them was, okay, this isn't as bad looking as the first time. There's probably some of that, like, nerves when I'm watching the first time of please don't be bad looking, you know? So you're looking for it. So I just have to just talking the actual CGI.
Okay. No, that's fair.
The rest of the fighting was fun and action packed, and I was into it.
So, but before we get to the Flag Smashers, because I do want to talk a bit about that before we close out, another thing that I just wanted to highlight, I like that it's not just John Walker, but that we also have Hoskins here. And this is an example of what I was talking about earlier with the show mining those kind of lost decades of Cap comics, because Walker and Hoskins both come to us straight from that, the Captain saga that we've talked about on the Instagram. But I had no idea that Hoskins would make an appearance. I knew, of course, Walker was coming. But, you know, in the original comics, I think we've surely discussed this before, but Bucky was less Cap's best friend and more his sidekick, like think Batman and Robin. And he had a very Robin-esque costume. So down the line, you know, whenever Walker takes over as Cap, he has his buddy Hoskins come in and take over as Bucky, and he wears the same costume. And it's kind of a deep cut in a couple ways. And I really liked that they pulled him in on like an Easter egg level. But I think what I liked more about it is the fact that Walker has his own partner, like in the same way that Steve had Buck and then Sam, I think really makes him more likable, more understandable, and kind of familiar.
Yep. And it's also a black guy.
Right.
Which I enjoyed.
Yeah, which I feel like is going
again,
to come
it adds
to play.
Another layer like we're talking about.
Right. But you're right. You know, it is funny to your earlier point. There's so much going on here. There's so much that was introduced in this episode. I mean, it's wild. Just the number of new characters and new threads that are laid out.
That's what I mean. The first episode we did was kind of shorter because I was like, I'll just kind of wait and see how they do some of these things, like race or the relationship between Falcon and Bucky, right? And then all of a sudden, episode two, we got all of that. We got the action, we got the race, we got the relationship, we got the therapy. Like, all of a sudden, we got all of it. So it's a lot. Okay, to kind of wrap this up a little bit, the Flag Smashers. My questions to you, and maybe these are just questions that we should be asking as an audience, and that's okay, is what vaccines are they stealing? Like, why are they stealing vaccines for what disease or what virus? And, like, are we supposed to know more about Carly at this point from a comic perspective? And then, is that their motivation just to take care of the people that have been here the whole time because they feel like the people that got brought back were better taken care of. I know we get that one line, but just what more about the Flag Smashers did you gather from this episode?
Yeah, I mean, so I think you are correct when you're talking about it being something where they're, I think that's all we're supposed to gather from the vaccine thing is that it's the Robin Hood deal where they're taking from the people that they think have, you know, maybe are less deserving or have already been given more, which is kind of still, it is a really interesting motivation because, you know, it's not like the people that are blipped back, I wouldn't think of as being like particularly privileged, but then again, I guess I can see it, right? Because I mean, they didn't have to go through the five. In some ways, they didn't have to deal with the consequences of Thanos in nearly the same way. So I guess I can see it. I think that's an interesting angle.
But vaccine for what, too?
Yeah,
do they have COVID?
I don't know. I wondered that. I was like, that's one of those other weird things where it seems like it's maybe just a coincidence, but it is funny how much, you know, talking about world outside our windows. In terms of Carly, this is another interesting take, kind of a twist on a villain, sort of like what we got in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I don't know that we talked about this then, but, you know, Ghost in the comics is very different in a lot of ways from what we got in that movie, but in one notable way, it's a man. And the same here. And so in the comics, there is a character called Flag Smasher. He doesn't lead a group called Flag Smashers. He leads a group called Ultimatum, which I think is supposed to be pretty similar. And in the comics, it's really interesting because he's not necessarily a villain either. He's someone more that just kind of, as we see here, doesn't. I mean, he's called Flag Smasher because he doesn't really believe in the idea of individual countries. So sort of like what they talked about in that first episode.
Right.
It creates a really interesting dynamic with Captain America in the comics. And I think it's going to be really interesting whenever we see these folks meet up with John Walker's Captain America, who, like we're saying, is kind of the most patriotic, most American version that we've really gotten. Because you can see where the Flag Smashers are coming from, and especially like in the context of the blip. But my point in bringing up the comic history there is it's Carl Morgenthau, and you know, here it's Carly, and right. So instead of it being Flag Smasher, the head of the Ultimatum, kind of quote borderline terrorist group, but not really. It's the Flag Smashers here. So another really, really good example of what we always talk about the MCU doing well, which is taking something, clearly adapting it from the comics, but in a way where I really don't know where it's heading.
Okay, my last question going forward is who were those people trying to stop them from leaving in that plane? Is that just the government?
That is so that's a good question. And I was going to ask the same thing maybe in a different way. And that I'm wondering who is the power broker? Because I think those people come from or were sent by him or her or whoever that is. And I gather that the text that Carly gets there, the threat is also from that person. And at one point I was like, I wonder if that's Zemo, because he's the one guy at that, you know, then we hadn't really been introduced to. But then the way the episode ties up makes me think he's coming in a totally different capacity. And he's in prison, so I don't know how he would be able to pull those kinds of strings.
I want it to be Norman Osborn so bad. At this point, it's just weird. I know it makes no sense with any of this, but I just think it'd be so fun. I saw this rumor. This is such a deep rumor. You ready for speculation times a million?
Yeah,
there's
been a while.
Speculation that Bryan Cranston is being auditioned or cast for Norman Osborn in one of the upcoming movies, which would be one of the coolest routes they could go, in my opinion, if that's true. If
that's true.
He could do that so well. Can you imagine? Oh, but like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If there was a guy behind the scenes who is ordering these people to stop the Flag Smashers, and you don't know if he's good or bad. And then it's kind of a gray area there. And then he eventually rises to like president or something. And then, you know what I'm saying? Oh, there. I mean, this is speculation, yeah. But there's a little bit of room for it here. Okay. So just let me toss that out there.
Yeah. I've had the thought. And at some point we're just going to have an episode where we kind of talk about the Dark Avengers. Cause we reference it so much.
I don't think this show, to be clear, is going to do that.
Sure.
This show in particular, but this show could just say the name Norman. And then later, right. Like a year down the road, they follow up on that in a different show. That's possible.
Right. The question there will be where Disney and Sony have left things after this next Spider-Man film.
Don't ruin my dreams.
I'm just saying the problem is any character associated with Spider-Man is technically still owned by Sony for now. So it complicates that a bit. But I do hear you, and I think that there could be something like that going on. Someone on Instagram noted that they thought that John Walker, whether knowingly or not, and the Flag Smashers are both sort of both have the same person behind them. Like they're kind of in cahoots, and that the Flag Smashers are basically just there for John Walker to fight against and kind of, you know, like it's a manufactured conflict to sort of instill more faith in him and to make him more of a hero. And then it's all kind of a show. I don't know that that's the case because we just don't know enough yet, but I thought that that was kind of an interesting angle. And I could see something along those lines where like the Flag Smashers are somehow tied up in like a government thing that we're just not aware of yet.
Okay, then briefly also on that note, I'm left asking, was there something more significant in the first episode with the Air Force pilot that they had to rescue? And why was he captured in the first place? What was Batroc the Leaper doing with him? Or was that scene just there to say, look, Sam can still fight? That's what I want to know still. That's a good question.
I would like to see there be more there because that's one of the things that I love so much about Winter Soldier is it's all like you think at first that first scene is just a chance to see Cap doing cool combat stuff. And then you realize that really like the seeds for the entire movie are in what's going on that ship. And so I would like it if, you know, I always think if you can use scenes to accomplish multiple goals, then that is always a sign of good writing to me. It's a sign of like a certain, you know, economy of writing. And I would like to hope that that's the case there because it would be a strange just kind of random thing that we never, because we really haven't gotten much follow-up there.
Right. It could totally possibly just be that they wanted to show that Sam can fight. But, I mean, kind of like WandaVision episode one, where we got, like, nothing going on, and it's this weird sitcom and whatever. And then later, by episode eight, you realize all this emotional impact from the sitcoms, including getting to see Wanda right up until the sitcom, like what had happened seconds before. And all of a sudden, you view episode one in such a different light, emotionally and, like, how she got there. You know, kind of changes all that.
Right.
So could it be more than just the rescue? Who knows? Who knows? Okay, I basically have covered everything I want to say, but I got to point out four tiny little, I'm just going to say them, funny lines, okay? Things like this. I loved when he said, what are you, like a white panther? He's like, it's actually white wolf. And then he was like, wait, what? Like that Bucky had a prepared response to that. I thought that was cool.
Well, and that's a fun shout out to a character from the Black Panther comics, but also what T'Challa called
the
Bucky
kids
there.
Call him. The kids call him, yeah. Also, on the negative side of things, really quickly, I feel like part of the drama comes from they're all repeating names way too frequently. The writers of this show put the names in there too much. So it's like when it cuts to Bucky and he says, we need to steal the shield back, Sam. Sam's the only one in the plane. Stop addressing him by Sam. It's like, you'll watch it again. You'll notice exactly what I'm talking about. Like, Walker's like, listen, Bucky, we got to do this. And Sam, here, this, this, this. Bucky,
that's
this,
funny.
This. It's like, guys, we get you're in the room. Stop using the name, okay? That's the most minor complaint, but go back. It would help with some of the drama being eased up if they didn't keep repeating their names.
I'll go back. I mean, there are times where that it's used for dramatic effect. Like, I mean, like in that scene in Civil War when Steve almost signs, he's like, God, Tony, every time.
Exactly. But when it's every freaking 30 seconds, it's the boy who cried wolf. Now I have no dramatic effect with the name.
True.
Okay, don't That's even so say this show and that line from Cap in the same sentence ever again, okay? Because he's allowed to say Tony in that way. And by the way, your delivery of that right there was excellent. That was a great recreation of that.
Wow, thank you.
And then my last thing is, for any of you Warzone players out there like me, video gamers, every time I see these troop dropping ships, I can't help but think about Verdansk. Warzone. Like, that's how every Warzone map starts, is you jump out of the ship like that. It's the exact same plane. Identical.
That's fun.
It's unbelievable. I'm going to show you. Maybe I'll even find this on Instagram. The Warzone intro and the intro to Falcon Winter Soldier. Last thing, and then I swear I'm done with this epic rant. I was laughing to myself that we called this FAWS, right? Falcon and Winter Soldier. Then I realized you made the joke of to FAWS because it's the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Then I realized that's not even correct. It's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Oh,
so it's
right.
To fat was technically.
That's true.
So that was me just rushing through the littlest things of consequence because I had spent an hour and a half talking about the heavy stuff. I had to say those things, okay?
Well, I just have one more thing, but it's actually something for you. Just because, look, I know you've been waiting for this moment. And it was one of those times where I just wish that I was watching with you when we finally saw Zemo pop up again.
Yeah.
Because that was fun for me, and I know that had to be super fun for you.
I do love Zemo. I think it would be really fun to have a fresh take on him, though, Robbie. Like, to the extent that he maybe is just, dare I say this, helping them?
Yeah.
With information and not actually the villain, I actually think that'd be fun. I'm always for new, Robbie. That's what I thought was so fun about Zemo the first time, was that he wasn't trying to physically dominate them. He was just trying to tear them apart through his manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew he couldn't physically battle. So to the extent that they don't try to do that again, I would enjoy it. Does that make sense? That's what I'm looking for more than any one thing.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm so excited, because we talked about on last episode how I just am so unclear as to what his motivations would be. You know, like in one of those trailers, we hear a line from him that's like, you know, we can't allow there to be superheroes, or superheroes can't be allowed to exist. And you know, that is in keeping with where he was in Civil War. But again, I don't know if that's one of those kind of throw us off and make us think that he's just going to be the villain we're used to, or if that, you know, it's a more nuanced thing. But I'm with you. Like, I'm so excited about it because I have no idea what's coming, but I love that character and I love Daniel Brühl. And I think a scene between him and Bucky specifically, given their past and given what, you know, when you think about what he has put Bucky through personally, I think is going to be a really powerful scene. And that's one that I'm really looking forward to.
And yet Bucky is willing to go visit him. So, and Zemo was on Bucky's amends list, which is incredible.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I thought you knew that. So I wonder if that dynamic has changed. So I am also fascinated to see that. But again, the fact that he was in prison is what I love, because it makes the consequences way larger. Like, if he had just, when we see him in this show, if he was out of prison, like wearing a mask, running around, killing people, or like manipulating things, I'd be like, oh, so nothing really mattered in Civil War that we kept him alive. He's already out.
Right.
I did like your explanation possibly of the blip moving the prison, but if it's not going to be that, I just like them trying a fresh take. At least he's still in prison. That's what I like. That makes more practical sense.
Totally agree. Yeah. I think that has me really really excited for the next episode. I think more so than last week's ending had me excited for this one.
Yeah, I think so. Again, I'm just loving that it's this Friday night viewing. It's a really fun rhythm. I can't get into this right now. This might have to be some other special episode, but do you ever wonder if this is going to permanently change how we view the movies? Like, you get conditioned into now there's something every Friday. So if we have 4 weeks off, it feels so long. And then will it also just feel different to be at a movie where you get the beginning and end of the story in 2.5 hours? You know, like, that sounds insane to say. But I just wonder if it's going to permanently change things for me.
No, yeah, it's a fair question.
In good ways and bad ways.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it'll just be fun to give Marvel the opportunity to decide which format works best for which story. You know, like, I think that they can now choose if they want to do long form or, like, you know, what do they want to be, a movie? Like, I think it's interesting, right, that, like, we have a Captain Marvel 2 movie, but we have, like, a Ms. Marvel show. And, like, what's the rationale behind making or like, at one point there was a talk about Ant-Man 3 being a show instead, and then it's confirmed that it is still a movie. Either way, I think it probably adds something fun creatively. But I have wondered that, like, even just for us, right? Like, we have the opportunity now to kind of get with the community and talk through a show for 6 weeks or 8 or 9 weeks. And, you know, when it comes to a movie, we'll all be kind of ready for it. And then you see it, and then that's it. Like, we'll have like some time to reflect on that, but it's not something that we're sitting in together communally. So it is, like, I do think it'll change that.
Well, next week we'll be talking about the show To Fat Wuss, episode 3, which we're pumped about. Like we said, we're probably more excited to talk about episode 3 than we were necessarily at the end of episode 1. So this is going to be fun. Like, more questions were raised, guys. So that's where you guys come in. Because did we miss some stuff? Let us know some fun Easter eggs that you found or some theories you have. Let us know what you think of the super serum, of Isaiah, of Carly. Like, where is this going? What's Zemo's role going to be? All of that, we love hearing from you. At the FFW Podcast on any social media. But also, we have a website, theffwpodcast.com. This is also important. Please follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts, whether that's Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, etc. And now we are going to be putting some of these interviews we've been doing and a few other bonus things on YouTube. So some of you guys have already subscribed to our YouTube, Friends from Work on YouTube, which is awesome. Keep that going. Robbie and I are really excited about amping up the interview front of things. So hopefully we can continue kind of increasing that side of Friends from Work while not losing our favorite part about it, which is talking about these movies and shows with you guys.
Right. And I'll just echo, we really do appreciate, as always, the feedback from you guys. But lately, there have been a lot of folks going and rating and reviewing. And it's hard to overstate how helpful that is for us as a podcast. Like, I know you hear, if you listen to podcasts, that's like the thing that's said over and over again. And I'm sure it gets tiring to hear us say it too. But it does mean a lot for you to take the time to do that. And it does help us a ton in reaching other listeners and being able to do this thing that we love.
Right. And it pushes Fart Hole's review way down. So that's good too.
Just probably a little sad though, you know, I'll miss
kind of miss Fart Hole. So as always, guys, thanks so much for being a part of this with us. This has been really fun for us, and we'll see you next week here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.